A very warm welcome back to another edition of Czechbooks, and today I'm joined by a man who's translated many Czech writers into English, and if you're interested in Czech literature, you may have come across his name in connection with works by Ivan Klima or Václav Havel or Ludvík Vaculík and many other Czech writers. He's Jerry Turner. Welcome to the studio, Jerry.
Thank you.
You've been translating for many years. How did you start in the business?
I started in the business of translation, or rather as a translator full-time, when I came to work in Prague in 1971 as a translator from French for the World Federation of Trade Unions. But as a freelance translator, that dates from 1977 or 8, when I first translated songs and poems by underground Czech writers.
And it must have been a pretty amazing time to be in Prague. I mean, it was a very bleak time in a sense, wasn't it? In that it was a time when, just after the Soviet invasion, when so-called normalization was taking place. But you managed actually to get to know quite a lot of people in dissident circles at the time, didn't you?
Yes, thanks to pub culture, I was soon sucked into a group of people around one particular pub in the old town, where the locals consisted of painters, sculptors, and people from the university, people who were no longer allowed to teach. It was quite a ferment, although it was a time of a bad hangover, was what it felt like most of all.
Let's hear a short extract from one of your translations, and you say that this is going to be from the very first book that you translated.
Yes, by this time I was back in England, and in around 1981 or two, the first book I translated was by the Moravian philosopher Milan Šimečka, who lived a great deal of his life in Bratislava in Slovakia, where he lectured in Slovak and wrote in Slovak, but also in Czech. And one of the books that he wrote in Czech was an analysis of the what he called the restoration of order, in other words, the reinstitution of a Stalinist-type regime after the Soviet invasion of 1968. It was after 1968 that he was dismissed from his university post and went and worked as a bulldozer driver and went on writing, as a result of which he did suffer persecution from the state police. And in this book he recounts the mentality of the state police. Much has been written about the interrogations of the 1970s, and there will no doubt still be more descriptions as they continue. The methods are many, and the interrogators differ greatly. Apart from regional variations, the charges also differ, and so, of course, to those under interrogation. When I read Ludvík Vaculík's A Cup of Coffee with My Interrogator, I said to myself that nobody could describe it better. It is a perfect description, that special combination of formally correct behavior, cunning, stupidity, lies, trickery, and a unique kind of intimacy. The latter derives from the fact that they know all there is to know about you. They know all about your wife, your children, your relatives, and your friends. They have read your books and manuscripts and your private correspondence. You can imagine them listening to your domestic rows and how they must have picked up every little sigh. For years you thought that nobody could care less about your problems and opinions. Fear not, they care. They may be uneducated, but in the course of their years of investigating selected representatives of the Czechoslovak intelligentsia, they have picked up a thing or two. They're able to appreciate the latest Samizdat novel, for example. Nonetheless, their sole aim is to write an exhaustive report, to detect a promising clue to a criminal activity, to discover about, as so far, unknown contact, or even, maybe, what they describe as a channel. They constantly threaten you and try to put the wind up you because, as they repeat ad nauseam, their chief objective is not to punish crime, but to prevent it. Thus, every hearing ends with the reproof, "Why do you do it? Can't you see it's senseless? You're just hurting yourself and your family. You've got a flat and a car. You're not hungry. What else do you want? We'll manage to build socialism without writers, journalists, and philosophers. Just get what you can out of it, like everyone else, and we'll leave you alone." so it goes on, hour after hour.
I mean, this is the world where the surreal has become the real, isn't it? And there's this extraordinary sort of cat-and-mouse game, both sort of literally and psychologically. And that sort of atmosphere really does permeate a lot of writing at the time, doesn't it?
Well, indeed. Listeners to Radio Prague not long ago had the chance to hear a play by Václav Havel on exactly the theme which Šimečka was dealing with there.
And in that particular production of the play, you, in fact, played Vavák, the playwright, didn't you, who's visited by this menacing figure?
Yes. If listeners want to go back and listen to that episode, if it's still on the website, they will certainly pick up the things that Šimečka is saying about the interrogator, as he is obviously in the play, how he knows everything about the writer.
You mentioned that you translated Milan Šimečka when you had already left Czechoslovakia. You were in Britain in the early 1980s. What else were you doing at the time? Because there was a lot of dissident writing somehow or other getting its way out of Czechoslovakia that couldn't be published back home, wasn't there? Were you involved in this whole process of getting it translated?
Yes, I was approached by Willem Prečan, who had set up the Documentation Centre for the Promotion of Independent Czechoslovak Literature in West Germany, as it was then. And he was bringing out very interesting analyses of the free intellectual activity in this country at that time. Beneath the drear exterior, there were very lively things going on in intellectual life, in literary life in this country, although the major writers couldn't be published. It meant that I was also asked by Prečan from time to time to translate shorter pieces, feuilletons by Vaculík, by Havel, and short stories sometimes by other band writers like Karol Pecka. So I was becoming more cognizant of the literary scene, which I knew very little of before. In fact, I left Czechoslovakia in 1980.
And so let's hear something you were translating at the time. You have one of the publications here from the time that was published in English by the Documentation for the Promotion of Independent Czechoslovak Literature. So let's hear something.
Here's a piece by Václav Havel, written on the 1st of December 1988, so that's a year before the revolution, and it was when they issued, for the first time, that the opposition issued a very clear statement of demands in terms of civil liberties and questioning the leading role of the Communist Party. It was called the Movement for Civil Liberties, or HOS, and the manifesto was called Democracy for All. What is to gain the upper hand in the immediate future? Havel says, the awakening spirit of freedom, common sense and civic awareness, or the water cannon. It could well be the water cannon, of course, but its domination will certainly not last forever. Soaking people to the skin and scaring them is one thing. Eliminating civil discontent is another. Water cannon are more likely to intensify the latter rather than eliminate it. Above all, there is no way now they will avert the logical consequences of the present political and economic events. So we should enter the new year without any illusions, but also with the assurance that the prison warder who talked to me in my cell on 28th October was not wrong when he said, you've got truth on your side.
That's fascinating, isn't it? Coming just a year before the fall of communism, written in December 1988. He was pretty much right, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. And maybe he didn't even dare believe that it was as imminent, but it is interesting that we're reading it now, and we're in a similar time of the year as to when that was written. It seems such a long time ago now, doesn't it, 1988?
Let's just finish by looking at another of your translations. This time it's a work that has nothing to do with the communist era. It goes back to a period slightly before that of the Nazi occupation of the Czech lands of Czechoslovakia, which is in another book that you translated, a compilation that you translated for your friend Paul Wilson, I believe.
Well, I didn't do all the translations in it, but I did three of them, and one of them is by František Langer, who was quite a character, certainly in pre-war Czechoslovakia, a soldier, a doctor, and a great writer. This is a charming story, which I recommend all your listeners, known as the Sword of St. Wenceslas, and about a legend about how the Sword of St. Wenceslas will be found hidden somewhere, and when the nation is at its lowest ebb, will be brought forth and bring out the knights from the hill of Blanik to save the nation. And here he sets the scene for the story. It was in 1939 when, as you know, Hitler's Germans, soldiers, policemen and cutthroats, occupied our lands, murdering, jailing and plundering us and taking away our rights and freedoms, and along with them our memory of the past and our hope for the future, not to mention our language, the very breath of the nation. It was a time of despair and desolation, and we lived in terror of the future. Then, during the first Christmas of those dark days, something happened that changed the way the legend will be told in the future. So listen, children, this concerns you. At that time, the Christmas season brought the unhappy people some consolation and strength, for they were able to get together more easily than at other times. For what could have been more welcome than to feel a true Czech heart beating close to your own? And so the churches of Prague were full for the Christmas midnight mass that year. The fullest of all, packed to the doors, was the Grand Cathedral of St. Vitus. People thronged in from every corner of Prague, but unlike other years, the parents, as if in collusion with each other, brought their older children along with them. They had not conspired to do so. They were simply all driven by the same idea. What if the Germans ban our ancient midnight ceremony next year? They've banned everything else we're proud of, everything that sustains us. The midnight mass at St. Vitus is held over the tombs of our kings, and we sing our own hymns. The beauty and the history of the place, and the sanctity of the moment, will awaken proud thoughts of our past, and strengthen our belief in a future rebirth. The very thoughts our conquerors wish to extinguish from our hearts and minds. Let us take our children with us, and if this is to be the last time, they will have something to remember all of their days.
And how does that story develop and end?
The story continues with some Czech children, finding the sword as they're playing on the island of Kampa in the snow, and they spirit the sword away somehow right under the nose of the German guards leaning over Charles Bridge, and they hide it. Perhaps under somebody's got it under his coat. Nobody knows exactly where it is. Since then, says Langer, the miraculous sword is in hiding again, and no one knows where it is. All we know is that Czech children will have taken it into their care, and that it is safe with them and will reappear when the right moment comes. That's why the legend of the miraculous sword and the Charles Bridge will now have to be told in a different way. It is no longer hidden beneath a stone. No longer will we walk across the bridge and say, somewhere here lies our hope and our salvation when things are their worst. But whenever we meet a Czech child, we will say, this is where it is. And there it will remain hidden until the time is ripe. Then St. Wenceslas will ride out at the head of the Knights of Blanik to save us. But when he gets to the Charles Bridge, his horse won't stumble against legendary stone. Instead, a child will run out, pull the sword up from out under his or her coat, and give it to him. The age-old prophecy will come true, and the Czech lands and all their peoples will enjoy peace and tranquility forever and ever. And that was written in 1940.
Well, Jerry, there are so many other things we could talk about, and there are so many things that you've translated, but I think for this time at least, we shall leave it there. So, Jerry Turner, translator and also sometime actor, thank you very much indeed for joining us at Radio Prague.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.